This is Hammond.
And Jessica.
And you're listening to the Friendly Atheist Podcast. Please go to patreon.com/friendlyatheistpodcast to support this show. And you will get access to ad-free episodes and bonus episodes. I thought we were going to be doing an interview show today, but...
Surprise, motherfuckers!
Surprise. I came home from a little break. There was so much to talk about, and I figured, you know what? We can hold off the interview for a little bit, and I want to talk about all this stuff. Otherwise, I don't know what I'm going to do with myself for a week.
So instead of me sitting on the couch, booping around on my iPad, and watching Parks and Rec...
I stormed over and said, we
must talk.
Do
you want to
record?
I'm like, motherfucker.
Yeah.
All right. So this is me being enthusiastic.
Yes.
And excited to be here.
And I'm going to depress you quickly. Because, of course, no, these are all important stories, but they're wildly scary and sad. Okay. The first one, a lot of these take place in our neck of the woods here. Let's start with this bombshell Illinois report into the Catholic diocese across the state, because this dropped in the middle of the week.
Really?
Yeah. You remember a couple years ago, Josh Shapiro, then the Attorney General of Pennsylvania, now the Governor of Pennsylvania, he issued this grand jury report about what their Catholic Church, all the Catholic dioceses were doing in their state, and it led a bunch of other state attorneys general to say, yeah, we're launching our own investigation to see how much cover-up is happening here, how much abuse is going on, because that's our purview. And in Illinois this week, Attorney General Kwame Raoul released his office's investigation into the six Catholic dioceses across our state. And here, this is an investigation that began with his predecessor, Lisa Madigan. He continued it when he was elected. Here's the bottom line claims that this almost 600-page report makes.
Oh, boy.
Okay. 451 credibly accused predators.
Predators.
I'm calling them predators.
No. I just wanted to clarify between that and like instances.
Yeah, no. 451 people named in the report. These are credibly accused abusers. These include priests. These include non-ordained religious brothers. That's their title. Whatever you want to say about it.
Do you know what that means?
There are people
like
who
volunteers
work
in the church?
Yeah, people under their purview, but who are not ordained priests.
Got it.
But
okay.
Like, still, if something happened, it's the Catholic Church's fault.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Here's what's interesting about it. 451 people, 149 of them had not been previously identified by the church.
Really?
These are new names coming to the forefront.
I'm sorry, just to interrupt quickly. Do you have a time frame?
1950 is really when they're starting here.
Okay.
Going through about
451, so over about 75 years
ish, yeah,
throughout the state of Illinois.
Yep.
Okay, sorry, just wanted to be clear.
149 of them had not been previously identified by the church. 330 of them are dead.
Well,
I mean, a lot of the abuse that has gone on in the Catholic Church happened decades ago. We're now dealing with the fallout, the decades of trauma that the victims feel. So, yeah, a bunch of them are dead, a bunch of them are not. But anyway, there's the numbers. How many victims did those 451 people have?
Oh, boy.
1,997. About 2,000 victims since 1950. And those are just the ones who came forward that we could document.
Forward and are still alive.
Some of them may not be, but they had records of the allegations from the past.
Understand.
But overall, we're talking those 451 people had multiple victims on average. One priest who is dead now, his name was Joseph Fitzharris, he had at least 20 victims by himself. Eight other priests named in the report had at least 10 victims each. Literally, it said at least 10 that we know of, like in the report.
At least 10.
Yeah. They counted
up. At least 10 lives that he fucking trashed.
And not just 10 lives, but all the people around him, right? All the victims' families and the people they knew, possibly.
And even if fuck these guys.
If you count how many years the alleged predators were in service, because keep in mind, sometimes they are accused of wrongdoing, but then they stay in the church or they're transferred to another, you know, parish or something
that.
How many years were they in a position of authority in some aspect? 9,726 years of abuse opportunities is how the report put it. at least 10, this was amazing to me, separate issue. One of the dioceses in Illinois is the Diocese of Belleville, very southwest part of the state. Mm-hmm. In 2011, at least 10% of all priests and religious brothers in that diocese were substantiated predators.
10%.
At least 10%.
One out of every 10 Catholics you, Catholic professionals you interact with.
Yeah. Like, wow. That number should be a couple percentage on average based on what we've learned over the course of everything. But in this one place, holy crap, it was over 10%. Just to give you a couple more numbers here, the Attorney General's office investigated, they looked at over 100,000 pages of documents. Mm. They had over 600 leads from survivors who contacted their office via, quote, emails, letters, voicemail messages, interviews, and phone calls. Mm. And by the way, zero drag queens mentioned anywhere in the report, just
so
for
weird,
good measure.
Because I heard those are the big predators.
Mm-hmm. Blaise Supich, who is the Archbishop of Chicago.
Say that name again?
Yep, that's right.
Blaise
Supich.
Supich.
He is basically the chief Catholic.
That is a bananas combination of names.
Uh-huh. Chief Catholic, Archbishop of Chicago. Okay. He released
Chief Blaise Supich.
Yep. Released a statement saying the Catholic Church in Illinois, this is last week, I should say, last week before the report was public. The Catholic Church in Illinois has been at the forefront of dealing with sexual abuse of minors for many years. At the time when Lisa Madigan launched this investigation in 2018, he gave a speech to people in seminary, and he said at the time, I'm confident that when the Attorney General looks in our files, that she will, in fact, find that we are doing our job. Guess what?
Just really quick, what did they find?
They found all those numbers I just mentioned.
Oh, so they were lying, which I think...
They were not doing their job. They were doing a horrible job at doing their job.
What was their job then? To protect each other?
Not abuse kids.
No. But like, what did they think their job was? Like, if they're like, hey, don't worry, gang, we're doing a great job.
I think best case scenario in his mind, he's thinking when we heard there were abuse allegations, we investigated them properly and thoroughly. And
oh,
the
so you
truth
think
is,
he's being sincere?
If I grant him sincerity, that's his telling of the story.
Priest, so
but again, there were 100+ victims, priests, who were not even mentioned in the report. These are people who said, I can't trust the church with this information, or I didn't know at the time it was abuse and I didn't know what to do about it, even if I didn't know anything. By the way, in Illinois, which is a very Catholic state, we are talking 3.5 million Catholics in the state. That's a quarter of the population in Illinois.
And mostly based in this area, where like the Chicagoland suburbs,
Chicago
I
is the biggest of the six dioceses. Yeah. This was amazing. They included this chart in the report. It's a bar graph, and it says the number of substantiated sexual abusers, the number of substantiated Catholic cleric child sex abusers. How many did we know about?
Okay.
Right? Before,
that was such an intense string of words.
Uh-huh, that's what they say. Before Lisa Madigan announced they were going to investigate this, they had the number at 103. That's how many names the Catholic Church had put forward and said,
predators?
As these guys are predators, we acknowledge it.
So they underestimated it by 300%?
Well, that's 103. Shortly after the investigation began, that number went up to 184.
Oh, sure.
By the time, these
are very specific numbers, huh?
They're not estimating.
They definitely have some kind of rubric that they're working off.
By the time the investigation ended, which is more recently, the Catholic Church had disclosed the number is actually 320. And with this report coming out, they're saying, no, the actual number is 451. And those are just the ones we found altogether, including yours. I mean,
did they speak to why this number grew?
In a way, I mean, part of it is the government, the Attorney General's office, put out feelers in a way, basically saying, listen, if you were a victim, we need the information so we can do our investigation. Here are ways to contact us. They're putting that out there. Like, we will make sure it's confidential. We will do the due diligence.
But if it's confidential, why was the Catholic Church then being like, no, it was 184.
Couple ways this could have happened. One is we heard this allegation, then we looked into it, and we didn't feel it was like we didn't feel like it was substantiated.
So, again,
so we dismiss
granting
it.
Them earnestness.
Yeah. It's also possible that the victims did not feel safe coming forward to the Catholic Church, so it never was mentioned to them. It is possible that some people who experienced the abuse did not realize until much later in life, like more recently.
And then these people would have gone to the Catholic Church, and that is why the Catholic Church's numbers grew?
Well, maybe they might have in the past had they known it was abuse, but they didn't realize it until more recently, now that we're having these discussions.
But that's not explaining my question. My question is, the original thing, they said they had, what, 103?
Yeah.
And then that went up to 184.
Uh-huh. Then
and then
320.
To 320.
And
what happened between those things? Like, what did the Catholic Church either find out or allow for?
It's possible that as the state is finding out stuff, or the church gets more thorough with its own, like, let us look back at what happened here.
Okay, I see.
Maybe they realize, you know what, we dismissed this, we should not have, so we're going to add this predator to our list.
Okay.
I mean, that happens.
That was the thing that bothered me, is like, what's happening that your number is inflating,
right,
but not to the rate of what everybody else seemed to find.
Yeah, the number of victims and abusers, the report said, are, quote, far greater than those reported by the Pennsylvania grand jury.
Ooh,
that bombshell
shit.
Report. Now, why all the discrepancies? Part of the problem is that several of the dioceses in Illinois were reluctant, that was the phrase, were reluctant to investigate allegations made against clergy members who were no longer on their payroll because those members were dead or resigned, or they were just laicized. Like, they're no longer members of the church. We take away your ordination.
Laicized as
that's
to
the
become
right
a
term.
Layman?
Yeah. Like, if
laicized,
you're no longer if you're
term.
No longer working for
yeah,
us,
yeah.
then who cares if someone made an allegation
I'm
against you? You're
your
not our
off
problem.
Your
yeah, you're not our problem. Three of the six dioceses, including Chicago, changed their policies only after this investigation began to investigate all allegations, including people who used to be on the payroll but no longer were. So that's
I
another
see.
Reason for the discrepancy.
Okay.
So, I mean,
I see.
Incredible. The report found that the percentage of sex abusers in the ministry at its peak in 1988 was 4.8%. 4.8% of the priests and other volunteers
so
under the purview.
That, 1 in 20?
1 in 20 were predators, like substantiated. By 2019, they said that number is down to 1.5%. Granted, any percent is too many, but it's down to 1.5%. But I mentioned earlier, in Belleville, in 2011, that number exceeded 10%.
Okay, what? Let's, Hemant, let's, you and I, let's ping pong back and forth. Let's name all the other industries where you can have a 10%
imagine
molester rate.
Imagine
schools,
if they did this with public schools, because that's what the defenders of the Catholic Church say. Like, there are predators in public schools, too.
Then find them. We don't want them there either.
Right.
Like, what? That,
and there's
that's
a process.
That fucking pisses me off.
And there's a process
as
to deal with
like,
it. And no one's moving them to another school.
Oh, well,
and no one's defending it.
Oh, but they're public school teachers. So we'll let them get a little handsy with
yeah,
the kids.
Like, no one is saying that.
And it's such a whataboutism is such an immature argument. And B, like, gang, you have all of the money in the world. You literally have more money than God. And the best you could come up with is, well, they do it too.
Yeah. If one in 20 teachers and student and aides and
I would storm the nearest public school if that like truly like if this would I think that's the thing that really frustrates me is they act as if like y'all don't care either.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
well, we're seeing it right now too with all the anti-trans stuff. It's like with right-wing people calling everybody groomers and stuff, and then they ignore actual elected Republicans who are actual predators. It's
I mean,
like drag queens are not your problem. Gay people are not your problem. And if they actually were problems, guess what? We support like them going to
they
prison
really
too.
Glommed on to trans people as their
it's
next.
It's the new gay panic.
It
it's
really
the
is
next
the new
one.
Gay. I wonder. It makes me think of like how like what smaller population can they target than trans people, which make up such a
I mean the options like, were we pick someone else on like LGBTQ spectrum somewhere
or like some race
or some race and like
brown people
we've done
are
the
you
brown
worried
people.
That you might be less
no they're not coming after my people
you, don't think?
Go, you gotta be a little darker
a
than
brown
me.
Atheist
come,
come on
but hey they've pinned plenty of stuff on atheists
first generation American I think
You know?
Is it first generation American when you immigrate to America?
If or I was born in America,
you're born
I'm
in America,
generation.
You're first generation American. Mm-hmm,
pretty much. Anyway. Yeah. But this report also offered recommendations moving forward. Some of them are obvious. Make sure the diocese has a straightforward way for victims to report allegations.
Is number one, shut the fuck down.
Yeah, that
Turn
too.
It off.
Believe
Turn
it or not.
Turn the Catholic Church off
yeah.
and start it again. Maybe this time you'll get it right.
Not one of the
it's
recommendations.
Like a buggy computer.
No, they were like, just make sure there's a way for victims to contact you so they can report this stuff. Here's what they actually said. Listen to this.
Why don't, genuinely, Hemant, why don't they just say, no, this needs to be shut down? Y'all have lost your privileges of having public trust. Truly, I'm mad now because why? Oh my God, 10% of your 5% of your population are full on predators. Here's how we think you can kind of cut
Improve
some corners and do a little bit better. If like a charter school or CPS or whatever came out with that same thing, everyone would be like, okay, gang, we need to burn this the fuck down and start again. But no, they're like, hey, 5% of your leaders are actively molesting children or people in their care. Let me give you 5 pointers and hopefully we can come out in the end. We're going to regroup in 12 months.
I don't know how you shut them down. I mean, I'm with you. I don't know how you would be able to do that.
I just don't know. If like I work for a nonprofit, if that was the case there, they would shut my nonprofit down.
As they should, if that were the case.
As they should.
Right. Here's what the report said. They were documenting, like, how easy is it if we wanted to report abuse? What would we have to do?
Did they have, like, secret shoppers?
Yeah. Here's what they said. To locate the Diocese of Rockford's full policy on reporting sexual abuse, mm-hmm. one must click through several links or search for the policy by name using the search bar tool on the diocese's main page. Mm. This is too cumbersome and difficult.
Yep.
There is a URL where you could do it, quote, but this link is not directly accessible from the diocese's main page. Like, they did this over and over. Like, you got to make it easier. That's why people aren't coming to you. That's one reason. Now, how have states responded in other places where they've released reports like this? Some states, as we've talked about, have opened up a window mm-hmm. so that victims can file sexual abuse lawsuits, even if they had previously been shut out of that due to statutes of limitations.
Uh-huh.
Because of a quirk of the Illinois law, this is not something lawmakers, even though we're a very blue state, lawmakers cannot do this in Illinois because the Supreme Court in the state has said, no, you can't do it that way. It requires an amendment to the state constitution, which is not out of the question, but obviously it's a much longer and more arduous process. So, like, we can't open up that window. But the diocese...
We're in the Archdiocese of Juliet, in case you were wondering.
Yes, that's one of them. The diocese could create an independent mediation and compensation program to help these victims.
That'd be nice.
They have not.
Oh, okay.
At least 27 U.S. dioceses have established these programs for survivors of sexual abuse, including Los Angeles and New York, those archdioceses. In Illinois, and including the Archdiocese of Chicago... have not done that yet.
Interesting.
Like, and we've said this before too, like the only real consequence that's going to happen here is if practicing Catholics and the people who call themselves Catholics and go to church decide, I'm not calling myself this anymore because I'm ashamed of what this organization is doing. I'm not going to go to Mass anymore. I'm not going to give money to these people anymore. I'm not going to send my kids to a Catholic school anymore unless they are willing to say, you know what? Sexual abuse is wrong, and I'm not going to perpetuate it by handing the predators.
What a brave stance that would
usually
be.
Usually brave. And I know that's easier said than done when it comes to, like, Catholic schools. Sometimes that is the best option for a lot of people. And if they have the money or the ability to go there, sometimes that is a good option. I get that. But nothing... there's nothing that says you have to go to church when, like, there's no pressure on you to do so from family or something like that. Tradition is not a good excuse to prop up a criminal institution.
Correct. On the tail of this, I'm very excited because the last time a bunch of Illinois-based Catholic pedophiles were dropped, my father, John Blumke, did a fucking deep dive and would call me and be like, you know, your Aunt John and Uncle Stanley... that's nothing. Like, the priest that married them, he was a total pedophile. Like,
yeah,
he was so
like,
over the moon to, like, find all these people. So I feel like we've just kind of made his June. Like, this is going to be his life. Also, speaking of Catholics making decisions, I had the conversation with some friends of mine where I work who volunteer with me. We're talking about Catholicism and who among us was Catholic. And a couple of them were like, yeah, I still go to church sometimes. Mm-hmm. And I know that, I know them, we're friends. Like, this isn't I mean, it's definitely inappropriate, but it's not, like, illegal. It might be illegal, but it's fine. Anyway, I said the thing of, like, so I was reading this thing about how, you know, a lot of Catholics don't necessarily agree with a lot of Catholic stances, like sex before marriage and gay marriage and abortion and things like that. And I kind of gently was like, how does that
sit with you?
Yeah. And it didn't sit well with any of them. It's kind of what it came down to. But they were very like you said, it's tradition. It's what my family does. Mm-hmm. It's what we do on this day. It was all
if your parents say, look, we're giving you money or whatever, inheritance and stuff, you got to keep the tradition alive. Ethical dilemma. I get it. Mm-hmm. If they're gone and no one's pressuring you to go, mm-hmm. you don't have to go because you think it makes you a good person.
100%. And I think between two of the Catholic women I was talking to, they had like 5 kids between them. And I think only one of them is still Catholic. Yeah. So it was an interesting...
Oh, we're going to talk about that in a second.
It was an interesting little conversation that we had.
Well, here's a follow-up
on
kind of the same conversation.
I'm the real man on the street reporter of this team, huh?
This is from Ryan P. Burge, the sociologist who does a lot of data analysis when it comes to religion. And he was looking at how often people attend church services. Mm. Here's what somewhat surprises me. If you go from 1970 to like now, 50 years later, you know, a lot of people are leaving organized religion altogether.
Right.
But the people who remain in the fold, if you're, let's say, an evangelical, the people who remain are pretty hardcore believers. So
getting more hardcore or
getting
just
more hardcore percentage wise, because if you were like on the fence over the last 50 years, probably something is like, all right, I'm not going anymore. I'm not calling myself this. But the people who are still evangelical today are like, oh yeah, I'm going every week. This is what I do. This is who I am.
At least once a week.
So like the percentage of people who go to service, church service every week or more, when it comes to, like, evangelicals, it's gotten higher over 50 years. And that's not weird, because we're talking about a share of the people who call themselves evangelical. The moderates have, like, left already.
I see.
So the
okay.
ones remaining, they're
so,
more
the
hardcore than
the remaining evangelicals, most of them are more hardcore.
Yeah,
okay.
and
okay.
when I say they go every week or more, that number is, like, a little over 50%. Like on average right now. That's the hardcore ones.
Okay.
You know, when it comes to Black Protestants, the number, it's not a huge increase from 1970 to now, but the number has gone up over time to like 40%-ish, give or take. Mm-hmm. Mainline Protestants, kind of roughly the same. But here's the surprising thing. When it comes to Catholics, this is what Burge basically found. In the early 1970s, he said, about half of Catholics went to church like weekly or more. Today, that number is down to 25%. These are among people who call themselves Catholics.
Wow.
Fewer and fewer Catholics actually go to church
Interesting.
Every week. And he said, this is not because of the pandemic. Attendance was already down to 26% in 2018. Like,
but,
it's Catholic
but those
specifically.
Those are people who specifically say, I consider myself Catholic.
Yep. Yep.
But they are going to church
but fewer,
less frequently.
A smaller percentage of that group who calls themselves Catholics go to church every single week. And it's a
Which,
sharp
drop.
Which, to
be blunt, means that they're losing money.
The church is
losing money.
Probably. I'm assuming so, yeah. I mean, which to me, that suggests that cultural Catholicism is still a meaningful label for a lot of people. Like, if you ask them, what religion are you? They will say Catholic. But the actual religious aspects of the faith are a lot less appealing to even people who are willing to say that about themselves, which could be an existential crisis for the Vatican. So why is this happening? Like, this is up for debate. Like, it's not like Democratic Catholics are ditching church and Republican Catholics are staying in the pews. It's not like that.
Okay.
Since the 1970s, Burge said, the percentage of regularly church-going Catholic Republicans has been cut in half. Like, this is not a political thing. Like, just Catholics in general are not attending as often as they used to.
I wonder what the share of Catholics as Democrats v. Republican. I'm curious about that.
If it comes to practice, my gut, I don't have it in front of me. I think it's close to half and half, at least when it comes to the issues like abortion. About half of practicing Catholics who call themselves Catholics say they're pro-choice.
Yeah. Like,
so I'm guessing that's the number two. That's why when we talk about politics when it comes to voting trends, Catholics kind of don't get counted much. We talk about white evangelicals. We talk about religious nuns, N-O-N-E-S. But we don't really talk about Catholics because they're kind of evenly split down the
middle. Since the 1970s, non-Hispanic white Catholics have voted majority Republican with very reliably, while a majority of Hispanic Latino Catholics have... I guess I didn't consider the sort of race divide there.
So why is this happening? Why are they not going to church as often? I mean, if I'm speculating, I think one reason a lot of people went to church, went to mass as often as they did is because their parents made them. And
those parents died?
And those parents are dead now. And like, you see a lot of older people now when they don't have the pressure on them. They're comfortable with ditching organized religion. They're not pressuring their kids to attend service. Mm-hmm. If no one's pressuring them, they're not going. They're not clamoring to attend like CCD classes if their parents aren't forcing them to go.
Yeah, it really is a whole thing of just enforcing it on your kids. Mm-hmm. And if that stops working.
And if you have better ways to spend your time on a Sunday, if you and your family have better ways to spend your time on a Sunday, church is an easy thing to drop. Like, I mean, go do something else.
I cannot underestimate...
Go sleep. Go volunteer.
How wonderful sleeping until noon
is. It's lovely.
If that's in your wheelhouse, whoof!
And given the first story we talked about, it's really hard to argue that church attendance is a societal good and that not going to church makes you a bad person because we've seen what the church does.
Seems like not going to church means your kids have a lesser chance of getting molested by old virgin
I mean, if you want to keep your kids safe,
virginity
keep them out of the church.
Social construct.
Right? And here's another thing.
Like, how, and this was the question I did not ask my coworkers because I like and respect them. How the fuck can you consider yourself a Catholic anymore? Like, how can you look at what they have done and what they are doing?
You know, I used to say that about Republicans, too, and I still wonder, but now I don't talk to anyone, so I don't know.
That's fair. I am the only person who associates with the outside world.
Yes.
I do think I don't know, like...
Think about all the stuff associated with it and how can you want to call yourself a Catholic these days? I kind of get the, I'm Catholic, but I hate the direction the church has gone in every single way. It's like, then you're propping them up by staying there.
But it's part of their identity is the thing, right? Like,
is it though? Like, again, what is it that's part of their identity? If they still believe in God, whatever, low priority for me. So it's like, fine, then practice your faith, but you don't need to support the institution. That's definitely easier if you're an evangelical, if you're a non-denominational Christian, too. Like, I'm not asking you, I mean, I wish you would stop believing in God, too, but I don't care. Like, you can believe in God, but stop going to these churches and giving money to these institutions.
I'm wondering if it is like... oh, God, obviously I don't know the numbers off the top of my head, but, like, Congress has a 22% approval rate, but everyone's individual congressperson has an 80% approval rate.
Yeah, the Catholic Church is wrong, but my priest is great.
Exactly.
My church is wonderful.
Like, it's very easy not to look at it as a global problem if you're kind of in on the ground floor.
That's a very fair point. And let's see if you live in Belleville. Like, maybe your church is part of the problem. Maybe you don't realize how big of a problem it is.
Apparently Belleville is just the whole bottom half of Illinois.
Yeah. The Pew Research Center noted in 2014 that I think this is important to recognize, too. When it comes to religious switching, like what religion you professed when you were younger versus what you are today... we used like the numbers they had. This is from 2014. Oh, they did ask, like, what were you raised to believe and what are you now?
Okay.
And they said, like, for every one person who stops being non-religious because they found God or whatever. For every one person who leaves unaffiliated,
who joins
4.2 become unaffiliated.
Wow.
Like the nuns grow over time. Catholics, for every one person who joins the Catholic Church, 6.5 are leaving.
So this is When I look at conservative politics, when I look at the church, these are the numbers that kind of make me want to shake them by the shoulders of, like, DeSantis and these guys. Like, the people you're riling up isn't that many people when it comes down to it.
Like, and you're making these pitches to religious conservatives, mm-hmm, who are a shrinking part of the population.
And in 5 years, that share is going to be even less. And this is, I mean, I've brought this, yeah, up. I've been beating this horse for years of the Republicans keep narrowing who they are targeting and othering literally everybody else, and eventually you're going to run out of human beings in that little tiny pocket. And certainly not, no matter how much you gerrymander, you're not going to be able to fully take over a country based on a 10% minority share. Like, it's just, it's so short-sighted.
It is a small, powerful group, but here's the thing about that shrinking group of religious conservatives.
Their lifespans are shorter. vote less.
They vote more. They all vote. Fair enough. The nuns are growing, and we're going to become a, like, majority of the Democratic base.
Yep.
But, like, three of us vote. But every single one of the religious conservatives vote. And that's the problem. That's why they pander to religious conservatives.
What's the 2023 version of Rock the Vote, and is it Podcast the Vote?
Yes.
I am launching hereby Podcast the Vote, a friendly atheist mission to get more atheists to vote. Hashtag Podcast the Vote.
Listen, if you're listening to this podcast and you don't vote, who are you? Why are you?
Okay,
I have
questions
about you.
Okay, we're not
shaming people. Oh, I am.
We are encouraging people
unless
to
you
move
are
in under
16
our
or 17, then you have an excuse. The rest of you, what the...
We have to give grace for people who have learned their lesson later in life. Everybody is welcome under my tent. Maybe not Hemant's, but it's a shittier tent. Worse food and no wine.
Who is listening to this and not voting? Go vote in every single election.
Do it.
Mail it in. You have time. Okay. Anyway.
You have time till what? 2024?
You have time to vote in every election because you don't need to go on election
day. Oh, I see what you're saying. Like, I thought you meant you have time until the next election. And I was like, I mean, I guess, but legally speaking, yeah.
So speaking of DeSantis, this is surprising because he's had a
Did you see his launch video?
Did I see the launch video? No one saw the launch video and no one heard the launch video, and it was embarrassing and it was wonderful.
I saw it and sent it to my friend Leslie,
yeah,
and we cackled over it for years.
It's going to be even funnier when he becomes our dictator.
But
here's the thing. He signed a bill into law recently, and I think it got no attention because he's done like 40 other crazy things since then.
Yeah, he's
and I want
Trump
to talk about the one that relates to church-state separation because it's a wild bill that he just signed. Here, I'm going to try to summarize this as quickly as I can, but I think it's important to understand where this is coming from and what he's doing. Back in 2015, that's how far back we have to go to talk about this.
Mm-hmm.
There was a high school football championship game. And in Florida, they do it the same way a lot of bigger states do high school football, which is they have a bunch of different classes. Like, the big schools are separated from, mm-hmm, the smaller schools for competitive purposes. And in the Class 2A championship game, it turned out to be two small private Christian schools who were eligible to play in this statewide tournament, because a lot of states allow for that to happen.
Familiar.
They do that, yeah. And the thing is, these two Christian schools made it to the championship game, like, good for them.
Mm.
And one of the administrators at one of those schools said, oh, well, we're in the big arena to play our championship game. Hey, can we get over the loudspeakers and say prayers before the game? And the state, which oversees the competition here, mm-hmm, the Florida High School Athletic Association, said no. This is a state-run event.
Yeah.
It's televised. It's at a public facility. No, you can't hijack our loudspeakers to do your religious prayer. No one's stopping you, by the way. You're a private Christian school. Go in your locker room and go pray before the game. You can do that.
Yeah.
That's fine.
And Jesus encouraged that kind of prayer.
It's totally fine. You could all pray on your own anytime you want. No one's stopping you. But the thing is, the state said no. There was a lawsuit filed. And I won't bore you with the legal details. It's literally still in court today. But the basic thing is, for years now, there's been this open question of, can the state allow prayers over the loudspeakers at these, playoff games,
and
no matter the sport?
Nobody has found the answer, which is no.
Well, the answer, they've tried to do it. The bills that they that Republicans in Florida have filed, they never jumped through every single hurdle until now.
So this
is what Ron DeSantis signed this week, and it is wild. I don't know what this does to the lawsuit that is still technically pending, but this does a lot of things to the Florida High School Athletic Association. Mm-hmm. It basically takes over the entire organization. And let me tell you what this thing does.
What do you mean?
Yeah. In terms of the prayer, it's the law now says it goes into effect July 1st. It's already signed. It's a done deal. It says the state must allow participating schools in any state series, which is a playoff game, like for any statewide thing, to
public schools,
public schools, private. I mean, anyone competing in these playoff games, they can all, quote, make brief opening remarks if requested by the school using the public address system at the event. Each school, I'm saying this now, each school gets 2 minutes to do this. And the governor's office specifically said in a press release, this preserves the First Amendment right to speech, including public prayer at the beginning of high school sporting events. Hmm. In English, they are now allowing 4 minutes of prayer at, let's say, a high school football game over the loudspeakers during the playoff run. Not regular season games, but like the championship one that anyone cares about.
Cool.
Totally fine. So they can all use the public address system. They can all spend 2 minutes telling the crowd to accept Jesus or whatever they want to do.
Or
the only
I can run up there and yell Hail Satan for 2 minutes straight.
Theoretically.
If I was a football coach, which I am like 2 credits away from being.
Right. The only caveat in the law is that the comments cannot be, quote, derogatory, rude, or threatening, which really they don't define that. But if you're telling me to like accept Jesus, the implicit threat is that I'm going to burn in hell. So does that count? Doesn't count. That, whatever. And by the way, Howard, you mentioned like, let's do a Satan prayer. Let's see what happens. The thing is, how are schools going to select someone to give these things? Because there are always, quote unquote, neutral ways to push Christianity. We've seen it at graduation events. Sometimes schools are like, well, our senior class elected a speaker to give a speech, and we're not going to look at their speech ahead of time. And, oh, look, it just happened to be a Christian who's delivering a prayer. Mm. And the courts are like, you can't do that. We know what you're doing. Right. We know the rule you're playing here. But no, this law will allow that to happen. There's nothing prohibiting a speaker from, you know, nicely condemning LGBTQ people by saying, like, we all want to avoid sin or something like that. There's nothing prohibiting a school from urging the crowd to give themselves over to Christ. Mm-hmm. And it's true, technically, it would be legal for a Muslim student or a Satanist or an atheist to lead the crowd in whatever they want to do.
Those are the kind of people who are fighting for a microphone.
Yeah, those are not the people who are going to be handed the microphone in any of these situations. This is a Trojan horse to allow public prayer at athletic competitions. Mm-hmm. And by the way, there is a Supreme Court decision that says you can't use loudspeaker prayers. You can't do loudspeaker prayers before these games, but we'll see what the courts do with this particular law. So that's part of it. And this bill actually gets even, oh, by the way, I should say, the Christian school that filed that lawsuit, here's their response to the new law. The next time Cambridge Christian returns to play for a state championship, and we will return, we will pray over the loudspeaker before kickoff.
Did they lose the last time because they didn't pray?
I didn't look. Guess
or did they win without praying, which I think would be a more compelling story.
Where did DeSantis sign the bill? Where did he do the
I don't know, a church?
Cambridge Christian School.
Oh, wow. Of course he did.
Now, maybe you're thinking the Florida High School Athletic Association might try to at least put up a fight or put up boundaries.
I've heard.
But here's the thing. The current Florida High School Athletic Association, here's how they're run. And they're run in a normal way. They have 16 representatives.
Big quotes are normal.
This is normal. They have 16 representatives who run the organization. And this is a mixture of, you know, coaches, administrators elected to their positions by like regions across the state. But now with this law, Ron DeSantis says, well, now you're going to have 12 members. I'm cutting it a little smaller. By the way, I get to appoint 8 of them myself.
Eight of them.
Yep. So he gets to replace the entire board of that athletic association with his cronies. Oh, and by the way, if they make any changes to their bylaws, that has to be approved by the state's Board of Education, which DeSantis also has control over. Oh, and by the way, the Board of Education also gets to approve the executive director of the athletic association. Sure. Oh, and any budget as well. So
yeah, cool.
That's
great.
The bill that just got signed into law. I didn't see it getting like any coverage, but the bottom line is this new law now allows 4 minutes of Christian prayers over the loudspeakers before playoff games. And it's not going to be just private Christian schools doing it.
Let's not be intellectually dishonest, right? Like, anybody does have the opportunity. So it's not fair for you to say they say Christian prayers. That is what is going
right,
to happen.
Right, the word Christian is
I
not
just want to
in
be
the bill.
Very, I want to be very as generous as we can to the thing. They did not specifically say, obviously
no,
that
no,
was
no.
the intention.
The law is about religious freedom. It
I
allows
just want,
anybody to
I just
speak.
Don't want us to be accused of hyperbole
no.
Is what I am
exactly.
trying to get to.
If you look at the writing, this is neutral on the surface. I think that's kind of the goal of this thing. It's all about religious freedom. You don't have to use the loudspeakers, but if you want to use the loudspeaker, mm-hmm. you're allowed to, and you could say whatever you want.
Right.
And if it happens to be a prayer, that's fine. We're not going to stop you. So I don't know what's going to happen in the courts with this one. I mean, I can guess. But, I mean, the hope is that if anyone challenges this, it'll just get up to the Supreme Court that already said Coach Kennedy can pray in
sure.
front of everybody.
I mean,
and
yeah, that's
students.
Definitely, like, their track that they're trying to run.
Yeah.
Cool. Everything's great. I'm feeling good about everything. I'm glad you came over tonight.
Once again, if this you're listening to this
Parks
podcast
and
you're not voting, what the hell are you doing? Of course this is better than Parks and Rec.
You're wrong and an idiot.
Okay, let's talk about...
I'm like literally in season 3 when she's running for city council.
This means nothing to me.
It is peak Parks and Rec. Season 3, season 4. Season 3. Go.
Sure. So, the Jehovah's Witnesses...
Oh, boy.
Every year...
we don't talk about them very much.
I know. It's been a while. Every year, they do something called a regional convention. It's like a 3-day event. They kind of bring together all the various different kingdom halls, and they're like, hey, your church here, your church there. All of you come together in one area. We got videos for you. We got, like, lectures that are coming from
none
high up.
None of y'all have celebrated birthday in your entire lives. Let's make up for it with one slice of cake
right.
per person.
So they're doing their regional convention right uh-huh. now. And one of the things, they've already done it. They do several of these, but it's the same content. Like,
where is it taking place?
Everywhere.
Time?
Everywhere.
Oh, okay.
You can find
all
it.
All at the same time?
You can drive like within 45 minutes and find where they're giving
Let's
the presentation.
Let's go. Let's go do some
Have fun.
Some
I'm staying home. So
that's what I wanted to do.
Oh, please go and report back. So... 3 days. Good luck. Very boring lectures, I got to tell you. So they already have done this, and then they took the video of all the stuff that is pre-produced, pre-recorded and stuff, and they have a way for members of the Jehovah's Witnesses to live stream it if, for whatever reason, they can't make it to the main event.
Okay.
And it turns out the live stream is missing a couple of videos that were clearly shown at least the first regional convention.
A couple full videos.
Well, a couple of very short videos. Here's the thing about Jehovah's Witnesses. They always, like every year, produce these like very carefully written scripts with professional actors. And they put together like, we want to teach you this principle. So here's a little vignette we have put together so you can understand what you ought to be doing.
A little
right?
morality play?
Yeah. So they do a whole bunch of these. They're all like a minute, minute and a half long, and okay. they have a whole bunch. And they, again, I'm telling you, production-wise, they look good. They look professional, right?
Okay.
But in one specific segment of this year's regional convention, mm-hmm. I'll give you some background here. It's called, like, better to be patient than to be haughty in spirit. Like, they want to teach you patience.
Haughty.
And they have a bunch of little
That's
mini...
That's their tagline? They use the word haughty?
Very boring people. They have like 5
people.
Different short sermons under that subsection, right?
Better to be patient than haughty.
Yeah, like all of you need to learn patience.
Sure.
And they have a bunch of short sermons. And in each of those short sermons, which are delivered by different people, different uh-huh. leaders and the witnesses, they have a couple of little plays interspersing these sermons, right? To mix it up, liven it up a
on
bit.
On video.
On video.
Uh-huh.
And in one of those mini sermons, the videos have gone missing.
Uh-oh.
Like, they're not found on the Jehovah's Witness website.
All
and that's
in one chunk or a few here and there?
Well, here's the thing. The way they realized something was weird is that if you watch the mini sermon, they didn't really smooth over the segments where the plays would have gone. It looks like a rough cut, and you're like, what did they just edit out of this?
Yeah.
And then they realize what was edited, and the website avoidjw.org saved copies of the stuff that's missing.
That's what it says on the tin. I appreciate that.
So here's the thing. I have the things, and I know you don't, this is not on video. I have the audio, and I'm going to explain to you, I'll explain to you video one,
okay?
This is a part of the sermon when they say, be patient. You got to learn patience.
Love of patience. They are talking
about a thing called disfellowshipping.
Uh-huh.
And basically what disfellowshipping is, it's like shunning.
Yeah.
It's basically saying, all right, we are all Jehovah's Witnesses in this family. But if Jessica chooses not to be a Jehovah's Witness anymore,
we choose Jehovah's Witness over our family member.
Yeah. You are now cut off from the family. And we've talked about this before, but like, this is cruel in so many ways.
It's absolutely.
Not just cruel to you if you leave, but cruel to family members who are like, let's say you have a child and I'm the grandfather. I'm like, I want to see my grandchild. Sorry, you've left the fold.
Yep.
So I have no communication with you anymore. And that hurts both ways.
Yeah. If you watch any movie about cults, that's or a documentary, I should say.
We talked about this in Norway recently. Remember, they basically removed the Jehovah's Witness as a religious community.
That's right.
In large part, because of this very practice of disfellowshipping.
Mm.
And by the way, we didn't talk about this, but in Britain right now, there is a celebrity. Don't ask me why she's a celebrity. Her name is Rebecca Vardy. She's the wife of a famous soccer player, Jamie Vardy. And she's been in the news over there because she has spoken out against the Jehovah's Witnesses in a documentary recently, saying she was sexually abused as a child, and when she went to her Jehovah's Witness elders, they just didn't take her seriously.
Mm.
She also said she was disfellowshipped when she left the organization after she turned 15. The witnesses have responded saying, well, she wasn't baptized. Like, buddy, she was a child raised in your religious organization.
Yeah.
Just because you didn't do the voodoo magic does not mean she wasn't one of you.
Right.
But this is a big story in Britain right now. So when you have all that happening, the Norway thing, you have the Vardy story.
Right.
Disfellowshipping is in the news a lot.
Sure.
People are curious about it. And in this mini sermon where they're teaching you about patience, they're trying to tell you patience also applies when it comes to being disfellowshipped or having a loved one who was disfellowshipped. So in video one, they show a fictional character. Her name is Elsa.
Mm-hmm.
And this is going to be about a one-minute clip. But basically, it's a voiceover she's going to do, just talking to the camera. And you can't see this, so I'm just going to describe it to you.
Okay.
She gets a phone call from her mother, and it is implied her mother is no longer a Jehovah's Witness. Okay?
All right.
So Elsa is about to receive a phone call from her mother. Elsa is still a believer.
Got
so
it.
Here is the first video. It's about a minute long.
Mom's disfellowshipping still feels so raw.
Elsa, please pick up. I miss you so much. I just want to hear your voice.
It's such a struggle. I miss her.
She's just walking around with her phone right now.
She taught me the truth. Gave me a stable life. She was my closest friend.
She's debating whether or not she should push the green button on her phone.
To pick up?
Mm-hmm.
What's the harm in just calling once in a while? To chat? Maybe I can even help her to come back to Jehovah.
So that's video one. And
that's
the intended...
fucking rough.
Mm-hmm. The intended takeaway is clear. Like, we know it's hard to cut ties with people who have left the fold.
Oh, God, I forgot this is coming from the Jehovah's Witness.
Yeah,
like,
they made this.
Stay in our church. This is what you can look forward to.
Right. And, like, their point is, yeah, we know it's hard to cut ties. We know you want to talk to people who have been disfellowshipped.
Jesus.
But we are telling you, you should not do that. You cannot do that. Elsa here just needs to overcome the temptation to talk to her mom. She needs to be patient. And the implication there is, if she is patient and she doesn't pick up the phone, her mom will eventually be so damn desperate to talk to her daughter again, her mom will rejoin the Jehovah's Witnesses. Okay?
Cool that's, religion.
That's the idea. So the second video here, now Elsa is sitting in a kingdom hall, like their version of a church. She is sitting in a service and is trying to come to terms with having cut her mother out of her life and trying to justify to herself that, you know what, this won't be so bad after all. So the first voice you're going to hear is basically, I'm using the term priest. It's not a priest, but you get the idea. A priest giving a sermon, and then Elsa's going to do another voiceover where she's looking at everybody in the congregation and realizing, like, okay, I don't have my mom anymore, but let's see
this
who I do
family?
Have in my life. Yes, here's that video.
Abel was essentially a spiritual orphan, but regardless of what his parents chose, he listened to Jehovah and patiently waited on him to fulfill his promises.
I never thought of it that way. What has Jehovah promised me if I patiently wait? Spiritual brothers.
She sees the men in her congregation.
Sisters.
Other women.
And mothers.
There's one Asian lady Jesus. Smiling back at her. And now she's back home, and she gets another call from her mother. This time, she just ignores the call.
And this is the happy ending?
This is the happy ending, yes.
Cool gang.
Wait for it.
I won't.
She puts down the phone and moves on with her life. She's doing happy things right now.
Like what?
Makeup, I think? I'm not sure. I forgot.
If I focus on what I do have and wait patiently, someday what I don't have may even come back to Jehovah.
I just want to note some grammar here. She said, what I don't have. Her mother is a what now, not even a who.
I mean, I think she's referring to the relationship, not her mother in particular.
Sure.
That's what I think anyway. If I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt, why?
Right? Why? Why would you?
Why would I know?
So the person who was speaking, who was delivering the sermon that these videos were supposed to be included in, he basically was saying all the same stuff, but it's like an evangelical pastor talking about why gay people are evil, but using nice language to do it. Like, it's sin. We don't like any sin. Mm. It's like that. He's talking about disfellowshipping, but in a nice sort of way. But these videos kind of beat you over the head with it. And I think that's why they took away these videos. They're like, this is evidence that makes us look pretty bad.
Oh,
these are short,
that's right. I
these are short
that we...
clips that could be shared.
How many of those videos were there? Just
in
the two?
Whole conference? Like a gazillion.
That disappeared?
Those two
just the
were
two?
Cut out as far as I can tell, yeah.
I'm very curious what they think... What do they think is bad publicity but still believe in? These are the things I find really fascinating about religious marketing is that they have a very strict guideline, right, of like what they believe in and what they do.
Yeah.
But they know that you can't say, hey, in Scientology, we believe that Xenu did these things and we were from a volcano
you
or whatever.
Be
they
at
know
level
you have
72.
To be invested before you hear that.
Yeah, it's the He Gets Us campaign all over again where it's like, Jesus gets you. It's like, well,
the
what
money
else?
Behind
what
that
does
campaign?
Jesus think about gay people? What does Jesus think about, you know, abortion?
Right.
And they don't want to answer that question because they have an answer in their minds. But they're like, oh, we don't talk about that sort of stuff. And that's the thing with Jehovah's Witnesses. They're trying to say, like, yeah, disfellowshipping is a thing. That is a part of the Witnesses. And they're trying to write it off like, you guys, stop defining us by this one thing that's kind of a horrible, horrible thing.
Well, and I think it's funny that they gave her, at the end, they gave her, like, hypothetical people she could form relationships with. They didn't even end her with, like, I have a new surrogate mother, and it's this smiling Asian woman.
You can't see the smiling Asian woman, but that is the creepiest interaction I've ever seen. Not because she's Asian. I mean, like, she just looks at this random woman in the congregation, and the woman just smiles at her, and the voiceover is like, mother.
Yep.
Like, she found her substitute.
Weird.
It's such a weird way to put it. Because also, they don't, when you watch the video, they don't have the interaction you would expect from people who clearly know each other.
Right.
These are strangers who are pushed together in the same area.
Yeah, that is a good point.
It's
she just
so
looks
weird.
At a chunk of men and is like, one of those can be my brother. Not like, oh, those are my buddies.
Yeah.
And, oh boy.
And by the way, the
Jehovah's
Witnesses have basically used the same argument to justify disfellowshipping that evangelicals use when promoting, like, conversion torture, which is, like, we're doing this out of love. We're doing this because it's good for you. It's always in the name of God.
Well,
it's always in the name of love.
Whoever's leading a particular church knows better what is good for you. You know what I mean? Like, you've lived your whole life as you. You've gone through your life as yourself. You know what makes you happy or not happy. No. Wrong. Idiot. Jehovah does, or whatever.
I would also say disfellowshipping itself seems to me like it would be a sign of the religion's weakness, because it sends the message that critical thinking, logic, reason, like, none of that is ever going to bring someone back to Jehovah.
I think that we think that critical thinking is a valued thing and everybody else does not.
Sure, but, like, nothing they ever say will bring people back into the fold.
Yeah,
it's
dog.
Always emotional manipulation,
yeah,
right?
Dog.
They're admitting that with this practice.
If they leave, that's what cults are. That's what happens. They left because they don't have the fortitude, the vision, the strength, the endurance that you do, and fuck them. This is the same thing as the GOP. You keep galvanizing your base and reducing it down until it has the density of a fucking star. But there's, like, four people in there. You know what I mean? Like, that feels like the inevitable conclusion of all of this.
Yeah.
Of, like,
we're waiting for the January 6th of
The Witnesses. Like, just, like, the 16 most angry people you've ever heard of are just vibrating into existence.
Like, it would be one thing if they removed these videos from their live stream, because they're not really shunning people. And these videos suggest that this is a part of their religion, but it's really not, like, so stop getting the wrong idea. Like, it would be nice if that were the case.
Yeah.
The reality is that
we
practice,
we would never tell somebody to stop talking to their mother. Wait, nope. We're going to advertise it instead.
But the practice is not going anywhere. They seem to be worried about the negative publicity, and they thought if they just, you know, throw these videos away or
do you think they were targeting,
make them disappear,
like 16-year-old girls who hate their moms and are like, if you join Jehovah's Witness, you don't have to hang out with your mom anymore. And they're like 15, so they don't know better. That's what I think they're targeting.
I mean,
with that
they need anyone they can get.
Yeah.
This was an interesting predicament that I heard. So those videos were uploaded to YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
Of course they were, because why not?
They
were uploaded on a channel run by someone named XJW Caleb. But he actually raised this point, which I thought was funny and also an interesting predicament. He just uploaded the videos as is. Like, here's video one, here's video two. It's their content. If you're watching Parks and Rec and you saw a one-minute clip you really liked, could you upload that to YouTube?
I don't
know. Just straight up, like, here's a clip from the DVD and just here's a minute segment?
Can I? I don't know.
You cannot.
Okay, I felt being set up for failure.
No, you can't. Because they would just say, you can't make money off of our content, right? And so the thing
is,
will the witnesses file a takedown notice of these videos? Because if they do, they're kind of admitting these are theirs.
But how could they deny that, right?
I mean, that's the point. I mean, even if you watch the videos at the very end, you see the little JW.org watermark. Like, it's their stuff. But are they actually going to try to take this stuff down and Streisand effect this whole thing even more?
Oh,
I don't know.
That's a good point. So, you hate to see the Streisand effect come to play in Jehovah's Witnesses.
Just,
do people know what the Streisand effect is?
Yeah.
Okay.
We've talked about it enough. So just those videos are devastating, but also they're predictable. That's what the religion
tells. I mean, it's just
wild
that that's in their marketing material. That's the thing that fucking blows my mind.
They wrote a script to do that. and then taped it and got actors to do all that stuff.
The number of people who signed off on this script is north of 20. They're all like, yeah, I have no notes.
I've wondered this for a while because they've made vignettes like that that are more egregious at times and indoctrinating and all that stuff. And I'm like, who are these actors? I'm so curious because I don't think I know who any of these people. I mean, I wouldn't know who they are, but like, do they have an IMDb page somewhere? Mm. Are these just regular actors who get called in for this? Because I want to know what that looks like.
Well, I mean, remember when we watched that one Ray Comfort movie?
Yeah, that was, and he hired professional actors. Yeah, I'm wondering if this is the same type of thing where they just hire people who are looking to audition for something, and do they know what they're stepping into?
Money's,
I don't know.
Money.
Is that the reason they're doing it? I'm very curious.
That actor texted me we were texting back and forth for a year after that thing. It was weird.
He was fun. Okay. This story you may have seen in the news. There is a website. Of course, I should have looked up the pronunciation. Hutton University.
H-U-T-T-O-N?
H-O-U-G-H-T-O-N. What? Hutton University, I'll call it that, whatever
it
is.
People spell asshole.
Small school in upstate New York. It's about 1,000 students. Small college. Fine. Whatever. they recently fired two residence hall directors, the people running the dorms and stuff. Reagan Zalea and Shua Wilmot. These are two people who worked at the school. They were both fired. Why were they fired? Because as far as we could tell, the students loved them.
I need some more context.
You will get
clues.
More. They say they were fired because they used pronouns in their email signatures.
Oh, no.
Mm-hmm. Hutton is affiliated with the Wesleyan Church, which is a conservative Methodist denomination. And over the past couple of years, they've done all these things. Don't worry about it. They've done all these things over the past couple of years to really lean into the conservative side of their faith. So this is from an article. Since 2021, it has closed. This is from the New York Times. Since 2021, it has closed a multicultural student center.
Cute.
And an environmental sustainability program.
Good look.
And rescinded its recognition of an on-campus LGBTQ club.
Nice.
After the club declined.
All are welcome.
Yeah. After the club declined to to promote conservative views on sex and gender. So here's what happened.
I want to read that email right now. If anybody can get that email to me about what they requested a queer group to do to align themselves more with conservative views, I would give anything.
I'm pretty sure they would have said, you can exist as a club, but you're telling everyone that they're hellbound, right? I mean, that's all you do every meeting.
Right? I need to know.
Well, when this multicultural center, the Mosaic Multicultural Center, that just closed this past March. There were allegations by the school that this place was exclusive and unwelcoming, and that's why we have to shut it down.
To white people?
Possibly. Well, the school's newspaper asked Zalea, who happened to be she worked with that organization and happened to be the residence hall director. Uh-huh. They were like, what are your thoughts on this? And she was very blunt about it. I'm going to quote her because it's a good quote. If anything, she said, she wrote about this. It feels like it just further demonstrates that the university is only interested in the kinds of diversity that are convenient for marketing purposes.
Wow.
It is outrageous to have diversity as a pillar in our strategic plan when we are actively cutting the programs and spaces that help empower diverse students to succeed.
Diversity is one of their pillars?
Yeah, at the school.
Do you have any notes of what they say they are doing?
I'm sure they just say we want to embrace diversity of all kinds under the name of Jesus.
We'll take Asian Christians.
Right, right.
Brown Christians.
All kinds of straight Christians are welcome here. Yeah. Cis Christians of all colors. Right. Anyway, her point is, and this is a fair point.
Genitals from both the binaries.
If the school doesn't embrace different kinds of diversity, they shouldn't pretend otherwise. I mean, that's a risky thing for anyone to say when you work at the school, but if it's fair, it's fair.
They work at the school. They're not students. They're not resident RAs.
They're staffers.
Okay, I just want to.
And here's the thing. So she shared that opinion. She made a good point. And she also happened to say, because I saw this in the school newspaper's article, that she was planning to resign from the school because she just didn't feel this is a good home. Makes sense. So days after that article was published in the school newspaper, the school's human resources person sent this woman a letter. She sent Zalea a letter saying, no, we're going to fire you basically before you can resign.
Ooh, wow.
Like, you don't get to walk away saying you quit. No, no, no. We're getting rid of you.
You don't quit. You're fired. Yeah. Now you get a pension package or what the fuck ever they have to give you now.
And she said the comments that this woman made in the newspaper were, quote, false and defamatory. They were neither. And I'm going to read you from the letter because it was posted on Instagram later.
Oh, boy.
You previously tendered your resignation, advising that you did not intend to return next year. However, as a result of your refusal to remove pronouns in your email signature in violation of institutional policy and false and defamatory statements attributed to you in the recent Star article, please be advised of the following. You're fired. Give us your keys, et cetera, et cetera. So, like, they specifically said, we are very mad about the things you said to the paper. And also your pronouns.
Also some other thing. Okay, so when you said these people said they got fired because of their pronouns, what you're saying is they absolutely did get
they
fired.
Absolutely
they're not
did
claiming
get fired.
Discrimination.
And by the way,
they were aggressively discriminated against.
The other person I mentioned, Shua Wilmot, who goes he and him. He said, I don't think he worked at the Multicultural Center, so he didn't, and he didn't make any quotes to the school paper, but he got fired for the same reason, the pronoun thing, so I don't know what else it was.
Oh my God.
But here's the thing.
I know it's not my business, but I do want to know if these people are cis, but don't tell me because it doesn't matter. But
it doesn't matter. They both are.
I want you guys to know that my curiosity is happening.
The New York Times spoke with both of them, and they're like, so what is happening here? Because... listen, if you work at a private Christian school, and this is a private Christian school, it's not surprising that they would make you sign a faith statement saying you believe, like, our faith. Maybe the students get more leeway on something like that, but the staff, like, you got to sign on to what we believe. And there's been controversy at, like, some Christian schools because they say... our beliefs say you have to believe in young earth creationism. And professors might say... but that's not, like, a salvation thing. Yeah, we have to accept Jesus. I get that. But, like, how old the earth is not a defining mark of whether you're going to heaven or hell. So, like, that doesn't make sense. Okay. But, like, the school says, like, what is the school's point here? Because both of these staffers are saying pronouns are not a salvation thing. Like, what are you talking about?
Can you point
about?
To the passage in the Bible where Jesus says, do not clarify your pronouns to help
Jesus
people?
Jesus uses pronouns all the
Especially,
time, right?
Can we talk, what, the second person's
I
name?
I am he, whatever.
Also, Reagan, kind of, it could
well,
be a very well gender neutral name.
Let me explain that to you.
Oh,
because
okay,
the, both of these people.
I just said it, you don't have to explain it back to me.
Let me mansplain this to you. Both of these people told the New York Times they have professional and pastoral reasons for including their pronouns. Like, they want to respect students who may be trans. Yes.
Well, that feels like the bottom line.
Bottom
That's
line.
Always what it is.
Sure.
We're
of
respecting
course,
trans
of
people
Of course we
want to
respect those students and their identities.
Yeah.
But also, and I'm quoting from the New York Times here, they both have uncommon gender-neutral names and said they have often been misgendered in email correspondence. This is Wilmot. He's saying, there's the professional piece to it and the practical piece, and there's also an inclusive piece. And I think that's the piece this institution doesn't want. Basically, both of them said they have been labeled by the wrong gender in emails because they have these confusing names.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, we kind of did that just so you don't have to go through the confusion and you know how to address us. And
I
that's
mean...
it. But they made the cardinal mistake of crossing the path of modern conservative Christianity because by showing respect.
This is the worst thing they can think of a person doing. I mean, listen, my name is Jessica, which is a pretty traditionally feminine name.
Yep.
The first summer I worked in Montana, I was called Jessie and referred to by he, him pronouns for 6 months by the owners. For me, a cis person, it was not devastating or upsetting. It was really quite funny. But...
but when
I can
you have,
imagine, but
when you have a name
a
like
Hemant
between... or Shua or Reagan, and it happens all the time, it's like...
it's not a cute little bit that I can tell as a story.
Right, it's annoying, and I'm just trying to get away from that conversation. Like, I've done this. I will email somebody, and I literally include my pronunciation in the thing, not because we're even going to talk on the phone or something, but, like, just so you have it in your head.
Truly, my girlfriend of mine, her name is Tracy, T-R-A-C-E-Y,
mm-hmm.
and constantly gets, misspellings. My friend Anne, same A-N-N-E.
Right. Misspellings, like mispronunciations, misgendering.
It's rude and inconsiderate. Right. And I think the least we can do to help smooth that path is, hey, let me give you all of the information you need to write a respectful email back to me. Spell my name right. Maybe get my gender right. Like, this isn't right. a lot to ask of people. And so by
that's what they're saying. They're saying, like, look, if we are being inclusive of LGBTQ people, that's great. Yeah. Like, we appreciate that. But also, we're kind of doing this for our convenience as well. Like,
And also, you know, I have a second and third job in addition to this job. And I'm a freelance writer, and every person I work with has their pronouns, not just in their email signature, but like Jessica Blumke, she, her, like in their, like yeah. you get an email from the person. And guess where I work? The American fucking Medical Association. So I feel like if they are chill with defining pronouns, almost everybody in that organization has their pronouns. If the AMA is willing to accept that, then maybe some shitbox university in upstate New York can chill the fuck out.
It's not... Oh, by the way, the school responded to all of this by saying, we have, quote, never terminated an employment relationship based solely on the use of pronouns in staff email signatures.
Tricky language, just like Jesus used.
Over the past years, we've required anything extraneous be removed from email signatures, including prayers? Scripture quotes.
Is that true?
Maybe that's true, but I would like to know, well, who have you fired? Who have you fired? Because they included like John 3:16 in their email. I don't know that they've ever done it. And the thing is, like, and what, if you're a professor and you have a PhD, are you not allowed to put PhD after your name? Is that extraneous? Like, what part is extraneous?
Yeah, that's fucking buck wild,
they're
man.
Not putting anything that's not useful information in there. Right. And by the way, Zalea actually said in a video that she made, she also has a link, like, for ways to sign up for meetings with her, because she's an RA and, like, resident staffer. Like, she had a link in there. That's more than extraneous, but no one ever said anything about that. So, like, they're not consistent about this stuff. I will say now, there has been an open letter defending both of them, signed by over 700 graduates of this school.
Wow.
It's been sent to administrators. A response from the school's president didn't address any of the salient issues.
They say?
Every Hutton employee affirms his or her understanding of an agreement to these faith-based commitments. Yeah, it doesn't matter. They also offered, they made a half-hour video, like, kind of explaining. The two of them that were fired. They made a video kind of saying, here's where we're coming from. We got fired. We want to explain to all of you why we got fired. But basically, my takeaway from watching the video is, like, these are the sorts of people who make college feel like home. These are trusted adults who are looking out for students who might otherwise feel marginalized. Like, these are the people I'm going to remember after I graduate. Well, I'm not going to remember the administrators.
Yeah. And I wonder if people are from either outside the U.S. or just don't know what all of this bullshit is all about. These people, resident advisors, work essentially in the dorms. So they are there specifically and only to support the, like, life and well-being of students. They are not academically minded.
Right.
They, like, a girlfriend of mine is,
we are
has
here
a
to help you feel
this.
Home.
Yeah,
feel
that is home. What the point of it is. Like, 18-year-olds, God, Lord, especially in a conservative college, 18-year-olds who have never spent time alone outside of their family, like, these people are essential to make young people be able to, like, feel at home enough to get an education and not party their faces off.
So listen, if you sign that letter, that open letter, and you're a graduate, just remember, I mean, I'm sure I'm speaking to the choir for these people, don't send any donations to this school. I don't care if you like had a good experience yourself. No one who graduated from this school, no one who's going to the school and, like, supports the staffers who got fired here, just remember that when you graduate and never send any money to this university. They don't want to be a place to help students.
Yeah. I don't even donate to Ball State University, but that's mostly because they haven't invited me back to speak to, like, a four-person atheist group or something like that. I feel like I'm finally kind of famous enough for somebody to invite me back to my own college campus, and yet...
Nothing.
And yet...
One day. Yep. I have not given
I'm not going back to Muncie until somebody invites me back.
I'm sure they're clamoring. It'll happen soon.
It's just, I just have this like image in my head.
No one's ever said I'm waiting to go back to Muncie.
That's 100% true. Fuck Muncie. I used to be in the English theory club, not to brag. There was like 8 of us and we would have professors come in once in a while. You're smirking.
That is 8 more people than I was expecting.
I was going to say we were cool. We were definitely not cool, but we hung out. And we would have professors come in. And so there's like 6 of us just sitting watching a professor like talk about their shit. That's all I want. I just want to stand behind a lectern and talk about some dumb bullshit to a bunch of like 19-year-olds who think I'm cool. Is that so much to ask?
It is so much to ask.
I mean, I'm sure they have an atheist club. What were we talking about? Are we
I don't
done?
Know anymore. No.
God.
All right.
It.
So the Satanic Temple.
When you put your pen down, I thought that meant we were done. I was so excited.
No, I just couldn't handle Muncie.
I'm sorry. So.
The Satanic Temple is suing the city of Chicago. Hey, hello.
Hey.
Why? Because one of its leaders has been trying to deliver a satanic invocation because apparently the city council says a prayer at its meetings, which I did not know. I don't live in Chicago proper, but like he was like been trying for years now.
In Chicago?
Yeah, he's been trying for years to do the invocation.
Yeah.
And he's made polite requests. The city staffers who work there are like, cool, we'll get back to you. And then they don't get back to him. And then he's like, hey, I'm still trying to...
Could we take a small step back?
Yes.
The invocation is for what?
They do an invocation at the beginning of their meetings to open up the meetings. City council meetings.
Just city council.
City council straight up. So the guy's name...
And it's usually a Christian... Okay.
Almost always a Christian prayer. Adam Vavrick is one of the leaders of the Satanic Temple's Illinois chapter. Mm-hmm. He said he first reached out to the chief of public engagement for the office of the city clerk. This is from January of 2020.
Oof.
And he basically said, yeah, you can give an
Has
invocation.
Anything interesting happened between then and now?
Nothing. Well, he was told at the time, this pre-pandemic, you'll be allowed to give the invocation after, quote, standard vetting procedures are completed.
Okay.
And that's fine. Of course. Anyone signs up, they're like, we just got to do some
they're
basic
not just
checking.
They're not going to let any Hammett
right.
meta up there.
Exactly. And then he's like, cool, I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
But no matter how much information he sent them, like, here's who I'm with, here's what I represent, whatever, he just never heard anything. They never scheduled him to speak. And eventually they stopped answering his emails.
Uh-oh.
And finally, after like a couple years of this, he asked a lawyer to get involved, and attorneys for the city, we were told in the lawsuit, because he filed a lawsuit now, they were unable to articulate the process for seeking to provide an invocation.
Uh-oh.
And could not say whether the city would permit Minister Adam to deliver an invocation.
Sounds like some dude behind a desk was making a decision, and I mean, now they don't know how to explain that.
Right, so the thing is, there's a couple problems here. One is not just that he's gone through what he thinks are the motions, the hoops he needs to jump through.
There
are no hoops. There are no clearly defined steps he has to overcome here. And then they're not giving him a slot, and no one there is explaining what he did wrong. They're just kind of hoping, if we don't answer his emails, maybe he'll just go away. And like he's just asking for the same treatment and opportunity given to the many, many religious invocation speakers.
This guy is treating this request like I treat my laundry. Like, if I just ignore it, it will just go away and I won't have to deal with it.
Since January of 2020, when he started asking, there have been at least 50 invocations given.
Oof.
So, like, they're doing it. Some of these people are getting through.
And he's not even on the schedule.
He's not on the schedule. He said, quote, I think the choice to ignore me was the hope I would just go away. But if we can just ignore a Satanist request purely because they're a Satanist, then we never believed in equal access in the first place. Which is fair.
I'm also in a position of a lot of people have been ignoring me, hoping I would go away, and I don't go away. And so I just relate to this person so hard of like, did you forget about me? Because I'm still here. I have nothing else going in my life. I'm going to keep bugging you until I die.
He actually went through the process of offered to send Chicago officials a copy of his invocation. He already wrote it. He's like, here's what I want to say.
This is what I'm going to say.
So you know.
Do not get it twisted. Yeah.
Yeah. And it does. Here's one line in it. Let us embrace the Luciferian impulse to eat of the tree of knowledge and dissipate our blissful and comforting delusions of old. That's the only line that might even be like, and that's just the language.
Yeah.
But it's not bad language. It's just uncommon language.
Sure,
he's saying
that's
like,
that's a good way
let's
to
be wise. let's not be deluded. Mm-hmm. You could say that in a Christian way, and you wouldn't even blink. It wouldn't be weird to anybody.
Yeah, because if you said it was Jesus' way instead right. of whatever.
And yeah. the very last line in his thing is, "Hail Satan." Yep, he added it in there, but also that's not that different from like "Praise the Lord" or yeah. whatever they say at the
May
end
God
of a Christian
bless
invocation.
America.
The journalism media outlet Block Club Chicago did ask city officials for comment, and they gave different versions of the same response, which is like, "I can't comment on pending litigation." But
is that stuff true though? Yeah. Like when they say I can't comment on litigation.
I mean, Donald Trump talks all the time and
that's
he's been sued
point.
For like 30 years straight.
I think it's clear and understand now, the law.
Check out, here's what one alderman said. One alderman, Daniel Laspata, who Favrick said he spoke to about this issue and who is copied on emails that he sent to city officials.
Oh boy.
Said he couldn't comment. Oh. But, I'm quoting from the article, in an email obtained by Block Club, Laspata wrote to a city official saying the requests were, quote, not at my behest. Basically saying, this guy's emailing you and CCing me, but like, I didn't tell him to do it.
Okay,
but then he said, once I learned that he wanted to end his convocation, with Hail Satan, it ceased being something I could support.
Yep.
For all of my desire to be inclusive, that would be a betrayal of my personal faith.
Yeah, I don't think he gets to make that call for the city of Chicago.
That's exactly right. Like, that's a perfect
Your
encapsulation.
Your personal betrayal? I don't care.
Right, that's why invocation should not be part of a government
yeah,
meeting.
Right?
And you can't be for inclusion until it's something you're personally uncomfortable with.
100%.
100%. Now, is that the reason Vavrick was denied the opportunity? We don't know because they won't respond to anything, which is why he has to do this lawsuit. But, you know, it's stupid.
I hate all
the lawsuit's
this.
Good.
Of
the
course
reason
it's good.
They're
I just
denying
hate
it is.
That it I hate these kinds of lawsuits because they make us look like assholes.
Do they?
No, I genuinely believe they do. But we're not, it's not because we're wrong. It's because if you write a headline of like,
Satanist demands invocation.
Exactly. Like, it's very easy to make that look not okay. And yeah. I just.
But he's found the right lawsuit here the law is on his side.
It honestly, this Come feels on, like Brandon. The next generation of nativity scenes on like city,
right.
city
we're
hall.
Right on the law, but it doesn't make us look great.
Exactly.
But
and like,
how
I
else
think
are you gonna
we
do it?
Kind of came out. Looking okay on that part, but like, oh God, I don't want to get involved in these lawsuits. They suck and they make us look like dicks.
I mean, here's the thing though.
This is me being mad at the religious people, not mad at the people who are rightfully filing these lawsuits.
Correct. And that's the thing. He went through all the proper channels. He didn't want to file a lawsuit.
Yeah.
It's not his choice to do this, but his hand was forced.
Yeah.
So good on him. I hope it works. One last story for you here because I was shocked. This happened while I was away, and I still am mad about this. A couple weeks ago in Florida, the Hillsborough Board of County Commissioners,
oh boy.
Their board that runs their county, they basically gave a symbolic award. I don't know. Who cares? Tampa, maybe? Whatever. They gave a symbolic award, a commendation to Rodney Howard Brown. Basically, Tampa.
Tampa Clearwater.
They basically said this guy, here's what it says. For over a quarter of a century, Rodney Howard Brown and his wife, their community outreach and numerous programs have positively impacted Hillsborough County, including humanitarian and Hurricane Ian relief work.
Okay.
Additionally, the Howard Browns hosted The Stand, 1,000 Nights and Beyond. From Revival Stephen Ministries King? International World Headquarters. Basically, they did this program. Meeting the spiritual needs of their domestic and international communities, a testament of their love to serve all people. The Board of County Commissioners of Hillsborough County, Florida, does hereby commend these two for their commitment to The Stand, their congregation members, and the community, and wishes them success for many years to come. Okay. So it's an award honoring their work for the community, which is not a weird thing. Counties do that sort of thing. City councils do that sort of thing all the time.
All the time.
All of that's fine. But who the hell is Rodney Howard Brown
to be receiving this?
And let me tell you what he has done for this community.
Oh, no.
He spent the majority of 2020 trying to spread COVID to as many people as possible.
Okay, that's how you say it. How does he say it?
He held in-person church services in the early month of months of the pandemic, continued gathering in person that summer with no social distancing, no mask. He said in August of 2020, that anyone who took a potential vaccine would be, quote, dead within a couple of years.
Counterpoint, still alive, motherfucker.
And then when vaccines became available to everybody, Rodney Howard Brown claimed, falsely, that the vaccine, quote, actually changes your DNA to remove the God factor out of people.
What?
Which, first of all, the vaccine does not alter your DNA. That's not how they work.
Also, DNA
there is not
doesn't...
a God gene yeah. that could be manipulated, nor is a vaccine capable of damaging your faith. That's his job. Then he said he wasn't worried about the virus because he has 13 machines in his church that would, quote, basically kill every virus in the place.
I fully thought you were going to say 13 machine guns, and I was so excited no. about where we were going.
But he said, I have machines that cleanse the air
like
of viruses.
Filters?
Like filters, and
so
it's like
you believe in
the
science
filters
or you don't believe
do
in
not
science.
Do that.
These are the things that confuse me. You say, I don't believe in a vaccine, but I believe in HIPAA filters. Why? Yeah.
And by the way, this is
Why?
The same guy who in 2018 was a guest host on what show?
The View.
Alex Jones's show.
Oh.
Alex Jones called Rodney Howard Brown Why? One of my favorite pastors. Oh, and Rodney Howard Brown said that time, Ruth Bader Ginsburg
oh, God.
Needs to be executed. Wait, I'm not done. He also visited the White House to lay hands and pray over Donald Trump.
Oh,
not a crime, but he's one of those. Oh, and in March of 2020,
oh.
beginning of the pandemic, he was actually arrested for holding those church services despite a county order to avoid large gatherings during the pandemic. The charges included unlawful assembly, violating quarantine orders during a public health emergency. But a month later, all those charges were dropped. Because the sheriff, a right-wing sheriff, said, well, he's maintained responsible social distancing on his church campus while engaging with community leaders in a dialogue about the best path forward for his congregation. All of that's a lie. He was not social distancing, and he was not talking about the best path forward.
I just looked him up because I was just Rodney Howard Brown
yeah.
brought to mind maybe who was a black guy, and I thought maybe Alex Jones was like, finally, I have a black guy on my team.
No,
he's
this guy
white
is,
as fuck.
He is.
Rodney Howard Brown from South Africa is a...
That's a different dude.
Evangelicalist and... Wait, what?
I know, it doesn't matter. Anyway,
oh, yeah,
he's
Look
also
his
said...
face!
Oh, I know. He's
Can
a
you believe that's
hair,
what he looks like?
Hair slicked back, all that stuff.
He looks like he's wearing a mask.
Does he?
Yeah,
where?
Doesn't it look like he's wearing a mask?
Oh, like...
Like a mask of his own face.
Like a Jim Carrey, the movie The Mask, wearing like a fake smile mask.
Yeah.
Even without the pandemic stuff, here's what else this guy's done. He claimed the CIA was training ISIS. Yeah. He claimed Barack Obama was building gas chambers and concentration camps.
Oh, where?
Doesn't
I think
matter.
He's FDR. He's
he also,
confused again.
He also said, half of Congress performs human sacrifice and drinks blood. That's a quote.
Half. And at this point, I want to be clear, Republicans are more than 50% of Congress. So at best, at least a couple of Republicans are drinking blood.
Yep.
Cool.
So why was he getting this award? The only thing I can gather is that
the
person who...
biggest head?
The person who presented this award and I think nominated him to receive it, her name is Donna Cepeda. She's a newly elected commissioner. And if you go on her Facebook page... It says she studied at River Bible Institute, which happens to be a school run by Rodney Howard Brown.
What?
I think that's their connection.
Wow.
But anyway, the bottom line is she recommended this dude. She got this guy to receive an award from the county commissioners, all of whom, except for the ones who couldn't be there at the meeting, all of whom signed the paperwork saying, like, yeah, good for this guy. We need more people like him
no
in our
community.
No notes
on this gentleman.
Like, what are they doing? Did none of you do a Google search?
No, they don't care, Hammond. If truly, it seems to me like when you tell people that critical thinking is bad, then all that's left is, here, sign this thing that's in front of you, hashtag trust me. Right? Like, that's... Like, when you train people their whole life to just believe what authority tells you, this is sort of the logical end end to it.
Cepeda, by the way, the county commissioner who nominated him, is also a conspiracy theorist who spread COVID lies and stuff. So she's one of them.
I love people being in government who are conspiracy theorists who are like, you know how slow the wheels of government turn and how much it takes anybody to do fucking anything.
Yeah, you're not getting the entire government to hold a secret.
And for you to be like a congressional person and being like, there's a huge conspiracy. They're all unionizing or whatever. It's like, dog, you fucking know you can't even get Democrats on the same platform. You know they haven't decided to do a full-on fucking coup.
She won that election, by the way, last year with 53% of the votes.
Wow.
She can win. Like, anyone can win. Yeah. It was close. People need to run. People need to vote. She is beatable, but, like, that's what happens when you allow conspiracy theorists to get access to any sort of
this
power.
This is what you should be bullying people to our podcast. Like, they already vote. We know they do. Run for office. I know at least one person ran and posts in our Facebook all the time, and we're very supportive.
And proud, yes.
You should do it. Well, I had
one more thing I wanted to say. This is quick. This is quick. We talked before about a Texas bill that would have put the Ten Commandments, King James Version, in every classroom.
Obviously.
In every classroom in every public school in the state. And there was like one Democrat, James Tallarico, who was basically calling out, like, we're all hypocrites here. You know that, right? Like, remember that?
What?
He called out the sponsor of the bill, basically saying, like, oh, so if they're lying, because we have people in our legislature who lie, things like that. Guess what? That bill, even though Texas is Texas, and even though they have a Republican supermajority, that bill did not pass.
Really?
That bill will not get signed into law. So why didn't that bill pass? I want to say it's because even Republicans in Texas realized this was a horrible idea.
But that doesn't seem like it.
That's not the case at all. They had so many right-wing crazy bills that they were trying to pass that they ran out of time to get this one over every single hurdle.
Sure.
However, they did manage to pass a law that we have talked about that would allow public schools to replace qualified counselors and social workers with unqualified Christian chaplains who would probably have the right to proselytize.
Sure.
So we'll talk about that if and when that gets signed. But yeah, so that happened, but yay for mini victories, I guess.
I mean, listen, let's take what we can get.
Tallarico, the guy who called them out on it at first, said the midnight bill deadline, he was fighting it. The midnight bill deadline has passed. We stopped the Ten Commandments bill from becoming law. I'm so proud of Texas Democrats for sticking together and stopping this dangerous legislation. And good for him. I appreciate everything he did, and I'm glad he spoke out against it. I don't know that that's the actual reason it didn't get through, but we need more people like him.
Mm-hmm.
I'll stop there. What are we talking about in the bonus?
So my friends who I've talked about a little bit, who are Seventh-day Adventists, homeschooled, I'm very close to their whole family, they just went down to Pensacola to attend their homeschool graduation ceremony.
That's a conservative area.
And it was a Baptist school. And so I have some stories about that they told me. I want to be clear, like, we're on the same page. Like, I'm not gossiping about my friends. I also want to talk about American Girl dolls because they've kind of come back to my brain recently. And then if we have time, I'm always wanting to talk about Watergate.
All right. And I can tell you about my little trip that I went on.
Oh, your trip. Oh, you know what? This past weekend, it was my brother and I drove up to Milwaukee to see my brother and me.
Did you enjoy it?
Oh, my God. I laughed so hard. I cried. It was genuinely some of the most fun I've ever had.
Awesome.
It was for my brother's
birthday. You can reach us. If you like the show, go to patreon.com/friendlyatheistpodcast. You can find me on Twitter at Hemant Mehta. You could find you on Twitter at
Jess Blumke. And you can always email us at friendlyatheistpodcast@gmail.com.
If you're listening to this Thursday night or Friday, go do your New York Times crossword puzzle. It's a good one.
Oh, yeah. Anyone want a review? May 15th from Vaccinate Yo Kids. Amazeballs, 4 stars. Hi, Jess. Hope this title got your attention. I love this podcast, and I've been listening to it for years now. I love Heaven's investigative journalism. I love Jess's commentary. She never fails to say what I'm already thinking. My only critique, with love, Hemant, LOL, is that I wish Hemant...
What?
I wish Hemant would appreciate Jess more for pushing back on him in good faith, because she does represent the view of a lot of your followers, and she makes me feel like I'm not in an echo chamber when she does. Thank you again for making something I look forward to every week in my red state. 4 stars, motherfucker, for the first time. You
stop writing
us
your
a
own
star.
Reviews. Oh. All right, we'll see you all next week.
Bye.